What if some day or night a demon were to steal after you into your loneliest loneliness and say to you, this life, this top four race as you now live it and have lived it, you will have to live it once more and innumerable times more, and there will be nothing new in it. But every pain, every joy, and every thought and sigh, and everything unutterably small and great in your life will have to return to you, all in the same succession and sequence. Would you not throw yourself down and gnash your teeth and curse the demon who spoke thus? Or have you once experienced a tremendous moment when you would have answered him, you are a god, and never have I heard anything more divine? I am Michael Cayley. This is the Double Pivot Podcast, and we are talking about the Premier League top four race, and I have never heard anything more divine. Mike Goodman, how are you feeling about the eternal recurrence?
Well, I understand what the long gap as you thought that up was before we started recording, at least. The music you heard on the way in is the Wailers. Max is with us on the other side of the virtual glass. Please download, subscribe, make us happy as podcasters. Subscribe over at patreon.com/doublepivot, where we'll be talking Champions League this week. And both me and Kaylee agree, we have Champions League takes. We found the games interesting and fun to talk about, so we're going to get into it there a little bit, which is great. Because, like, I think a lot of COVID ball this year has resulted in games that are not interesting to talk about. That is not the case with these Champions League matches.
Yeah, the Champions League really does reflect, like, the COVID ball that maybe could have been.
Yeah.
Like, really, really dumb soccer. which is delightful. I think that we are back here talking about the top four race, because
it keeps happening.
We've still got a top four race. And I can't wait to talk about Tottenham. I'm sure you can't wait to talk about Everton. Ooh. Like... They whooped up on Crystal Palace, absolutely destroyed them.
This is the worst. Like, I've watched most of Everton this year, and I did not watch that match. And I knew what happened. I knew they conceded a late equalizer. And I just assumed, right? I just assumed that it was, like, similar to a lot of the second half of Everton's season, where they were just not very good. And this time they didn't get away with it. And then you informed me that, no, in fact, they played great. And that was, like, the worst thing I've heard in a month. So thanks for that.
Yeah, no, it does appear at this point that Everton are probably going to finish behind Liverpool.
Once again, a successful season for Liverpool based on the grounds that they have topped Everton.
Yeah, so
should we start with Chelsea, since their loss is what really sort of, like, opens the door to getting a good top four race here?
Yeah, and in particular, like, not just their loss, but I think that, like, you know, Chelsea were then not particularly impressive in the Champions League either.
Yes.
And part of what, and like, Chelsea have been so dominant under Tuchel that, like, you know, losing to West Brom and not, you know, and conceding chances again.
Yeah, the conceding chances thing there was fairly interesting against Porto, I guess. Although, like, Porto are a pretty good team. I don't know.
The
West Brom thing, I think what was really, like, I think what sort of dominated post-match was that, like, the XG was way out of whack and that West Brom just, like, had some miraculous finishes. And, like, that was kind of true. But also, like, Chelsea were down a man for half an hour. They weren't dominant really before they went down. I mean, they scored a goal, but they were not great when you consider that West Brom is quite bad. I am loath to take all that much from it, other than to say that, like, as long as the point differences are small, Chelsea is not that much better than everybody else, and there's a big old close chasing pack.
Yeah, and I mean, like, and, you know, everything for Chelsea went wrong after the red card.
Yeah, everything. That is actually exactly what Thomas Tuchel said after the match. He said, everything that could go wrong did go wrong at that point. Which is true.
Yeah. And so it's hard to sort of, I mean, part of this story is that West Brom, like three times broke to the exact same spot in the penalty area.
Yes.
Relatively well defended. Obviously clearly shut down, but, like, these were not easy shots, and they made three of them from the same position, which, like, great work if you can get it. It is fun to me because West Brom were on pace early this season to be, I think, pretty solidly the worst team that the Premier League had seen since Derby County. And
at least by
a couple of weeks,
numbers, yeah.
Yep. Like in a couple of, exactly. They had a few extra wins and they had some hot shooting. And then a couple weeks of Big Sam, and he had a couple of bad games to start, and now they are like a perfectly okay bad team, just like a normal pretty bad team, which given their talent is kind of impressive.
Yeah, I mean,
and
I think
they get like a win.
Quite clearly see here is that like Big Sam has improved them. Yep. It's interesting with Allardyce because there have been times where he has taken over teams that were decent but not getting points, and he has not particularly made them better. He has, in fact, oftentimes made them somewhat worse in order to shore them up and make sure they survived. So, like, having him take over a truly awful team and watching him sort of just, like, instill structure and fundamentals in them has been very interesting. And, like, I think it's gonna fly under the radar that West Brom have really improved under him.
Yeah, like, if they... I mean, I assume they can take most of this team back down to the championship. I don't think they're paying anyone any money. Like, they can probably
you
know, with him in charge. That's, I don't know if they'll be able to hang on to Pereira, who, like, that's the other fun thing about this team, is that, like, he has given Mateus Pereira, like, a role creating on the break.
Mateus Pereira receiving one long ball over the top, bringing it down, and then cheekily clipping it over Mendy is like the most Brazilian playing for Sam Allardyce thing you can possibly imagine. It's wonderful.
It's perfect.
Anyway, so Chelsea lose, and now we got a race. Now, like, you know, everybody, you know, get in here. Like,
yep. And then on top of that, Leicester City played Manchester City, and so they lost, because that's what happens when you play Manchester City.
It is. Manchester City are very, very good.
And so Leicester are down to 56 points. So now they're only 4 points up on fourth, 5 points up on fifth.
It's still a lot this late in this. I mean, that's still a lot with eight games left. Nine for Everton. But like 8 games left for everybody. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but like they have a lot of cushion. Although they play West Ham on Sunday. So like that could change quickly.
Yep.
But after that, they've got like a nice cushy part of the schedule, and then Leicester finish with Manchester United away, Chelsea away, Spurs at home. So like, it's not out of the question that we will see two straight years of Leicester collapse, given the way the schedule sort of like is drawn up for them.
Right, it'll be a very different kind of collapse.
Yes, they'll be losing, like, to good teams instead of bad teams.
They'll be losing to good teams instead of bad teams, and they'll have started with a basically undeserved cushion.
Yeah.
And they'll be losing with more or less their best players available.
Yes.
Whereas last year they were a very good team, a solid top four team, and then everyone got injured. And so they lost lots of games. This is a very different kind of story from that. I kind of thought Leicester would improve more, honestly, as their players came back.
Yeah, it's a little bit weird. I sort of feel like there's a little bit of like playing to the scoreboard going on with them with the table. But I'm not sure if it's smart.
Yeah, because like, Ndidi is just fully back.
Yep.
Like, they've got their elite defensive midfielder who, you know, cleans everything up for them, and they've got Pereira back.
Yeah.
Although
he's sort of not playing super minutes yet.
Yeah.
And like, a part of what I think is just happening is like James Maddison's not having a good year, and he's been in and out with injuries for a lot of the season, but he's back and he is not particularly producing. And
yep.
Like, without him, there is kind of this creative gap between Vardy and the attack and, you know, sort of a very, what is a very solid defense. And like, our guy, Iheanacho, has sort of flowed into that role, and obviously he had a great goal-scoring month. But it is a problem when I think a lot of sort of the idea of Leicester becoming a quite good team was predicated on Madison and Barnes continuing to develop. And either by injury or just happenstance, neither of them have really come on this season from where they have been in their young careers.
Yeah, and so Rodgers has been playing this like 3-4-1-2 kind of deal. Yep. Where you just get more defenders on the pitch, and then you've also got Ndidi, so you kind of have a somewhat free role for Tielemans to be the guy who moves the ball forward. And then you can hopefully use your wing backs. You can get more attacking out of Castagne and Pereira, and you've got a system where you can manage running two strikers in Iheanacho and Vardy. And the thing is that there still is just that hole between Iheanacho and Vardy and that back seven.
Yep.
And Pereira can't quite fill it. Castagne can't quite fill it. They played Iosi there. And there just isn't a creative linchpin there. Basically the way it works at this point is that a ball comes long and either Vardy is able to run on behind and pass to Iheanacho or vice versa. Or Iheanacho can like hold up and play Vardy in. And that's the thing they've got. And honestly, I kind of think that maybe they should just lean into that rather than trying to be more fun and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brendan Rodgers is a good manager and in general, and I think that if that's what he's leaning into, then there's good reason for it, generally speaking. He has managed to find solutions to problems for most of his career. Now, I don't know if it's going to be enough looking at that schedule to keep them in top four, but they're a pretty good team. And like, there's nothing structurally about them that says that like they're way out over their skis to be a top four team as compared to some of the chasing pack.
Yep. So, so they're still like, I would have them as the most likely team to finish in the top four.
Yes.
But like
for now,
I think
literally pending Sunday.
Exactly. And pending Sunday where they play West Ham, who are still totally in this. And like, I mean, literally are in fourth place.
Right. They are in fourth place. Their stats, it is not an undeserving particular fourth place in as much as like Chelsea and Liverpool still have better stats than the teams ahead of them, but like not by not outside the range of sort of normal weirdness. And West Ham are like right in that group. And they played kind of a wild game against Wolves last week where like they scored twice very early, three times within 38 minutes. And then they just like totally packed it in and let Wolves come at them and like got away with it after the week before having blown a 3-0 lead to Arsenal. So there's like some weird undercurrents there, but the undercurrents are not like David Moyes is trying to bore your head off and win 1-0.
Right. Like they went for it to go up and they obviously finished quite well. And the Jesse Lingard story is delightful. I think that the one thing that's happened with this team several times is that they have, when they attempt to sort of Moyes it up and pack it in, that's when they struggle the most.
Well, I mean, I think it is worth noting that like right now they're without Declan Rice, which is like a pretty big part of that. And they're also like somewhat down defensively to starting Dawson at center back. So like the personnel is kind of an issue here. But like, I don't know. I don't think you get like, part of the reason that West Ham might not be as good as these other teams is that they have that fine line to walk, right? Where like it may just be that they cannot handle being without Rice and a center back.
Yeah, I do. If you looked at the like scouting report for Mark Noble on FB Ref, it is hilarious.
Oh boy,
he is a huge plus in passes attempted, pass completion, and a big plus in progressive passes for a central midfielder, and a zero at everything else.
Yeah. And, like, you know, this is a guy that was, like, a passable all-around midfielder at his prime, and which is, like, you know, a long time ago at this point. So, like, if they have to play Suchek and Noble at this point in Noble's career for a period of time, they're gonna be, not that they have like a better other center midfielder option, it's not like Moyes is being like loyal to Noble here at the expense of somebody who would clearly be better in that midfield.
Oh yeah,
I do wonder if they might go back to the back three that they played at points as sort of like a tacit recognition that like this isn't working. Because the other thing they would do when they wanted to shore up the midfield would be play Noble in front of Rice and Suchek. And obviously you can't do that. So I think that's what's left, and I wonder if we'll see it against Leicester, is going back to a back three. And playing, you know, and like, I don't know if that solves the problems, but I don't know what else West Ham has to do other than go out and score three goals like they have the last two matches.
Exactly, and he did play Masuaku in front of Cresswell against Wolves.
Which is literally the same as a back three when they call it that sometimes.
Right. But they still win, and I mean, they're winning mostly because they've got a really good attack.
They do! Those are really good, like, it is not them magicking something up here, right? Like, Antonio and Bowen and Fornals, these are like, and Benrahma, who comes off the bench almost always. These are good players. This is just like good attacking talent that fits well together.
Yeah. And then on top of that, Jesse Lingard is absolutely just finishing out of his mind right now.
You know.
And like he's another useful attacking player. Right. He is not six goals and three assists in 890s.
No,
like this is crazy. Yes. But he is a guy who's going to put up some shots, get some chances. He's going to be just as useful in those roles as guys like Bowen and Fornals. And he's the one who happens to be on a crazy hot streak right now. So like,
yeah, absolutely,
nice.
We should rank all these teams at the end, so I won't ask you.
Yeah.
I won't ask you that now. I will just say, okay, let us move on down to Chelsea in fifth, who we talked about somewhat because they lost. I don't have anything much else to say about them that we didn't cover already, and we're going to circle back to them during the Champions League show anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing to say is that, like, the degree of their defensive dominance at the beginning of Tuchel's reign is, like, okay, they're not going to keep doing that. You know, it's not a, and if they're not going to keep doing that, like, they are merely a very good Premier League team that should be favored to finish in the top four.
I guess that's like, right. But, like, at the same time, before the West Brom meltdown, they had gone, like, forever without giving up a goal, right? It's like four Premier League matches. So, like,
yeah.
I'm a little, like, my gut is like, yes, they were too good defensively for that to keep continuing. But, like, at the same time, there's not a ton of evidence that they aren't still great defensively.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's a question of, like, great and historically great.
Yeah.
And I do think that, like, you know, they conceding a bunch of shots inside the penalty area and a couple of good chances to Porto, counts against that as well. Like that's
that
not
happen.
Something
that absolutely did happen.
And they like it's. I mean, it's just going to be hard to dominate defensively like that, with possession all the time.
You'd think, like, but like Thomas Tuchel's made a career out of it. So, although like
yeah,
Tuchel's also made a career out of not being great defensively and sacrificing that for attack. So this is a little bit different.
All right, so that's Chelsea anyway. And so we can move down the table to Tottenham.
It is amazing to me that, like, I feel like every week Tottenham is melting down, and yet, like, they still get enough points that they're just sort of, like, sitting there in sixth place.
Yeah, they can, like, get pretty well beat up by Steve Bruce's Newcastle.
This Grape was a draw. I mean, this was a truly terrible performance.
Yeah, like this was the first match that Tottenham played a bunch of bad matches this season. Obviously, for the most part, the bad matches they've played have been when they were attempting either when they've been just outclassed by a very good team a couple of times, or when Jose has had them playing this absolutely dire defensive style that leaves them sort of pinned into the penalty area. And so their defenders are having to do a lot of defending, not because they're put out on an island, but because, like, everything's happening in the penalty area. So the guys in those crucial spaces are their central defenders, and they get exposed because that's the weakest part of the team. This match was different from that. This match, Tottenham were, like, trying to press or at least close down. As we've talked about, Tottenham's pressure numbers remain among the highest in the Premier League. It's hard to call it really coherent pressing, especially when the one player whose pressure numbers are not up is Harry Kane, who's clearly sort of like has a less taxing role on this team at this point. So, like, they're pressing up and then getting beaten again and again and again by Newcastle, and it was weird to see them fail not with the balance tipped way too much to defending, but now with the balance tipped somewhat too much to pressing. Or, like, honestly, this is the sort of game where you would wonder how well the players are, like, how much the players are playing for the manager right now.
So the thing about the pressures but not, like, coherent defense has actually been a hallmark of Jose Mourinho over the last 5 years, but both at Spurs and at United before that. It is unclear to me whether this is a new development or it's just sort of like what happens when you don't score on your first shot. Because one of the features of Spurs' season this season is that, like, they're running really hot in attack at even states, and then they're running really hot in defense until the last 15 minutes, and then they're running, like, somewhat cold in the last 15 minutes of matches in defense. It's really a funny sort of, like, dichotomy that you're looking at, which is, like, it is kind of true that they have been a little bit unlucky in the last 15 minutes of matches, as they've conceded, like, 8 goals. But they have been, like, overwhelmingly lucky to get to the last 15 minutes of matches with leads to cough up. So, like, that doesn't speak well of the manager.
Right. Like, you have to turn chances into goals and prevent chances to not have them turned into goals against. And then you have to turn goals into points.
Right.
And this Tottenham team has been very efficient at turning chances into goals, but they have been very inefficient at turning goals into points because they keep dropping those points late.
But the thing about that is also that, like, it's not like teams have been efficient against them in turning chances into goals. They keep giving up tons and tons of chances. And in fact, like, in a more normal year, it wouldn't feel like they kept gacking up late leads, because, like, two or three of these matches, they just would have been back and drawn at, like, the hour mark.
Yeah.
Like, there's no part of this that is working for Mourinho, except that once again, Hugo Lloris is having a really good shot-stopping season in goal. And then, like, for a while, like, Kane and Son just magically scored every time they touched the ball in the first 10 minutes of a match.
Like, yeah. And they're still, like, well above their XG. Like, Kane and Son typically are. That's been true for years. But they still are. The thing that I've been wondering about with this Tottenham team is, like, because for the most part, what goes wrong is when they're, like, tilted way too much to defend. and so they're just unable to attack. And here they were tilted a little bit too much to attack, or at least to sort of pushing and pressing forward. And it just seems to me that it's hard for me to believe that this team, there isn't a way to manage and sort of to fade their lack of center back talent with the right balance of attacking. And Jose just seems like unable to find it. And it just sort of, the whole season, it's just been swinging back and forth with very little of it working.
Honestly, I think the major problem for Jose Mourinho is that there is no, he does, like, the thing that, the argument that he always does the same thing is incorrect. But what is true is that he never, ever, ever, ever does defensive possession. And with the players on Spurs, especially if you were to put, you know, the better possession players on the field at the same time, and like you have a defensive midfielder in Højbjerg who is a good possession defensive midfielder. He's not like a, you know, there are great defensive midfielders who aren't particularly useful with the ball. Like Wilf Ndidi, like he's great, way better than Højbjerg, like defensively, but like it's not very good with the ball. Højbjerg is a very good defensive midfielder who is also quite competent with the ball. So like you have a lot of players on this team who could function quite well in a possession system. And that is just not Jose Mourinho in any capacity. So like if we're talking about like the balance is never quite right. And I think that that's true. Although, like, I have questions about, like, perhaps it feels like the balance is wrong because they've gotten off on the front foot so much this season. So that we haven't actually seen long stretches of time where, like, they are vulnerable because they're attacking. But, like, at the end of the day, I think that there are a lot of mixes that would involve a heavy amount of just sort of sterile possession that this team, that would benefit this team, that they just don't, like, do, ever. It's like this one thing, which is like, okay, then probably Jose Mourinho shouldn't be the manager of this team, if that is the case.
Yeah. And he may not be.
You know, the 2 weeks ago, I think, Fabrizio Romano reported for us that, like, Spurs are, like, considering the situation and they want to see what happens, which is like definitely a step further than we had sort of heard before, which had always been like Jose Mourinho is the manager. So we'll see.
Yeah. I think the main thing here is that like these have been a set of performances and then like we have reporting on the problems that the squad has with Jose Mourinho, the problems that the board has with Jose Mourinho. Jose Mourinho is out there telling everyone that like everyone else sucks except for him.
Yep.
Just not like usually the best way to win people onto your side, but hey, you know, he's going to take a shot.
It depends who's already on your side though, right? Cause like if Harry Kane happens to be one of the people on your side, then like a lot of that other stuff doesn't really matter. Like, if yeah. You have Harry Kane and Daniel Levy, both of whom think that, like, your motivational tactics are the right way to go about things, then, like, everybody else can kind of stuff it from that regard.
Yeah, you've got a striker who upholds Ring's ideology. the question is whether you've got a chairman who also does, and whether... like
whether a league cup
telling all the other players that they're bad is the sort of thing that will like keep Harry on your side.
Also, whether or not a league cup potentially is rings.
Yeah.
I mean, because Jose Mourinho is going to say it's rings if you were to win it. Now you got to beat City to do it anyway. So like, who the heck knows? But yeah.
Yeah. So it's just hard for me to see this team playing well for the stretch that they need to. Like the evidence is that they have played well for stretches, especially early in the season, and they had a shorter run later, sort of right around a little after Christmas, I think.
Yeah, that's about right.
And like, so the projections and as well as I think the betting markets, like, you know, leave open very much that possibility that they're just going to start playing well again, and they could. We've seen them do it. They have good players, but the context with the manager and the context with like the ways they've been playing badly,
yeah,
makes me kind of dubious at this point.
Man, I mean, the Europa League performance and the Newcastle performance were like two ones that really like are eye opening from the like it may just never happen perspective.
Yeah, and they've got United next, and then a resurgent Everton. So,
who? Yeah, I am not abandoning this bit. I mean, aside from the part of the beginning of the podcast where I abandoned the bit for a little while, I'm not abandoning this bit. Who is next? Yeah,
well,
who do we have next?
Next up is Liverpool. Liverpool still behind Tottenham because that's the season that we're in.
Yeah, all right. So they're tied on 49 points. It's three behind fourth.
Yep.
This is a little weird because we're going to talk a bunch about Liverpool in the other podcast.
Yeah, so but they also played a really fascinating game against Arsenal at the weekend.
Where they mushed them. Absolutely mushed them.
Yep. And just like, it was a fascinating game in that it took a while for this to be like a dominant win.
Yeah.
For a while, it was like a really slow game in which Arsenal did nothing. And Liverpool, they're playing Thiago and Firmino in midfield against a team that is, you know, as you know, Arteta's teams do, trying to very slowly move into a position to move quickly.
Yes, that's a good way to describe it.
Liverpool just never let them get into that position to move quickly. And then on top of that, I mean, I think Arteta also played all of Pepe and Aubameyang and Lacazette, which is just not enough possession players to play this style.
Even when you have Ceballos, Odegaard, and Partey with them.
Yep.
Plus,
like this is the extreme degree of like Arteta's ideology. Like they cannot play the way they need to with even three forwards who are not plus possession players.
No, I mean that's right. But then it did. It took until Jota comes on and they go to the front four situation before like Liverpool turned that defensive dominance into just overall mushing.
Right, because they were able to, I mean, that seemed to be what Klopp recognized, was that they could like get on the front foot a little bit more, get another player into the penalty area while maintaining that control.
And like also, Arsenal got worse because Tierney comes off, and Tierney is an important part of what they do. It seemed to me to be like Tierney comes off at the half, but it still seems to me to be basically a direct response that you then move Milner to fullback, and when you make the change to bring on Jota for Milner,
yeah,
like you just like the balance shifts, but you don't need to defend two flanks anymore. So. You don't. Although, like, we'll discuss defending flanks and fullbacks as it relates to Liverpool on the other podcast, because, oh boy. But yeah, and then it was just, like, a complete crushing of an Arsenal team that had been playing pretty well, but coming into this match.
Yeah, and, like, this, obviously, like, the context of the Real Madrid match is important, but like this game with this lineup sort of, it felt like I was interested in the degree to which this could be a kind of Klopp version of COVID ball,
where you put Fabinho and Thiago in there and you just crush the midfield, and then like,
yeah, and like it is a more higher pressing version, but like the thing is that Arsenal still had a lot of possession in this game.
Yeah, that is also, it seems to me, somewhat peculiar to Arsenal.
Yeah,
where like given how Arsenal wants to play and given the borderline nature of their talent to pull it off, that like just severing the connection to the fast part of Arteta is an effective strategy.
Yeah.
And
I was
gonna say, whether that was like the tactical intent of Klopp or this was a more general approach from Klopp that happened to fit sort of hand in glove with playing against Arsenal, it does seem that it was sort of like the perfect styles make fight circumstance for Liverpool, especially in retrospect.
Yeah, I think that's right. Like, because Liverpool were able to not blow themselves up pressing because they would settle back into defending Arsenal's nothing possession for long stretches of time. Right. And so, like, if they tried to play this style with this kind of control, they wouldn't get to have those, like, nice periods of defensive possession both ways.
Yeah, that is exactly
against
right.
another team.
But what does that mean for the rest of the season? Like, just from a naked talent and sort of performance standpoint, they're the second best team in this race, right? Like,
yeah, clearly. It's not close.
Right. And they're 3 points out of fourth and 2 points behind the most talented. Like, the Champions League is well in the mix here.
No question about it. And they do not have a hard schedule.
No, they do not.
They've got Villa, they've got Manchester United, they've got Leeds, and after those three out of their next four matches, Southampton, West Brom, Burnley, Crystal Palace down the stretch, like...
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it is not... Look, I think it is not unlikely that they could get to the point with four matches left where you say, well, if for them to have a chance, they need to take 12 of 12 points. It is also not at all out of the realm of possibility that they take 12 of 12 points, but it's not, I mean, you know, it's just math, right? Like, even if you're a pretty heavy favorite in all four of those matches, it is not all that much. It's certainly not a given, and it's not super likely that you will, in fact, take 12 of 12.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you remember long ago in December when Liverpool put up 3.8 XG against 1.4 XG conceded and took 1 point from West Brom, Newcastle, and Southampton.
Right, exactly.
Like, you know, you can even play perfectly well, and that can happen. But those are the things that happen to you when you're the favorite and you're just a little bit flawed.
Right. Okay. Do we dare extend the list another team?
I mean, I don't really think so. It would be funny to make you do it, but...
I mean, they do have that game in hand, right? Which is the only reason why you would have the conversation. But, like, I think 538 has Everton at, like, 2% to make the top four? Something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that they're out of it. It's just that they're they are a worse team than all of the teams ahead of them, and they are behind them.
Right. And, like, James comes back, and, like, you get, like, a few weeks of the good Everton, which could possibly exist. We've said this number. It did exist briefly at the beginning of the season, but I don't really see a need to talk about that until it starts happening, because they're going to need a couple of results.
I will say that, like, their schedule is not hard. I mean, they finish on the last day of the season against Manchester City, who will have clinched the title for a month at that point. But, like, they go Brighton, Tottenham, Arsenal, Villa, West Ham, Sheffield, Wolves before that. So it is, like, let me put it this way. If you look at that schedule and you're like, well, that doesn't seem very easy for Everton, well, now you have explained why they are not really in the Champions League race. Because, like, you have that handful of teams like Villa, like West Ham, like Arsenal, like Spurs, that, like, sure, if you want to be in the Champions League, you got to be better than those teams. Are they better than those teams? Maybe Villa?
Yep. I mean, are they better than those teams with all of their few good players who are old and broken, fit and on the field together?
Right.
But...
Weird how in COVID year that hasn't happened.
Yeah. Who would have expected that a bunch of 30-year-olds with severe injury histories...
Although on the other hand of this, right, like, it's also the year of the old striker because nobody has to run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the old strikers are very good this year, except for poor Sergio Aguero's hurt. But, like, Ronaldo, Messi, Zlatan, they're all... Like, Lewandowski, who now just picked up an injury. Like, they're all good this year. Benzema? I can't believe I left out Benzema. Benzema's having an amazing year. I'm starting to get ahead to the Champions League stuff. So let us come back and say let us definitively rank, not by likelihood. Well, let's do both by likelihood, but by how good they are, and then by likelihood of making top four. So
yeah, so I feel like quality. I feel like it's not terribly hard at this point to say Chelsea and then Liverpool.
I think that's right. I mean, certainly health. Certainly given health, like who's getting on the field for Liverpool. I think that is correct.
Exactly.
After that, I kind of feel like you just kind of shrug and say Leicester.
Yeah.
Right? Like, or what? Like, is Leicester, like, clearly better than West Ham? I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think it, I mean, these are really close calls right at this point. Like, it is very much two teams that are the best of these teams and three teams that are worse. And like Spurs are like have performed at a level roughly similar to Leicester and West Ham, but the shape of their performances recently kind of makes me put them fifth.
It is a weird thing with Spurs. I think like taking Spurs and West Ham is kind of instructive, right? They've performed at a very similar level this season. But when you look at West Ham and you look at the names on the team, you say the fact that West Ham has performed at that level is impressive. And the fact that Spurs have performed at that level is disappointing. Now, what does that mean 30 games into a season? Like, 5 games into a season, it means, oh, well, we would expect Spurs to be better. Even like maybe 15, 20 games into a season, it means that. Does it mean that at 30 games? I'm not really so sure.
I really don't think so. And like one of the things about this West Ham team, and this is partly about talent evaluation, partly this is about like what a good manager does, is that there aren't weak links on this team.
Right.
Right now with Craig Dawson at center back and with Mark Noble in center midfield, there are. But when they're first like 12, 13 players, there aren't weak links. And that's not because these players aren't flawed in various ways. It's because they're being set out on... One, it is a pretty solid group of players. And they're being set out on the field in ways that like makes them work. Like Aaron Cresswell getting to be a crossing center defender.
Right.
Is a brilliant way to use Aaron Cresswell. And,
Suchek like, is, like, the perfect example. Like, turning Suchek into Fellaini 2.0 is just, like, perfect.
Exactly. And using Fornals as a kind of, like, more of a possession midfielder than an attacker a lot of the time. As a way of controlling games. Notably, Jose Mourinho not doing defensive possession. Like, Rice and Fornals are like a pretty good make this team really use defensive possession reasonably well. The other thing about this is that over the course of the season, West Ham have also performed better than Leicester City.
Yes, true. But Leicester City really have like more than Spurs, like significant injury to offset that to some degree.
Exactly.
I think I would go Leicester, West Ham, Spurs in that order. But like, I wouldn't, like...
I think I would, too, and I definitely wonder if I am underrating West Ham a little bit in doing
that. Yeah, I think that's right. Now, in terms of likelihood of making the top four, this is a really tough question.
Yep. Yeah, like you look at that Leicester schedule and the way that they have played... And it's certainly true that, like, you know, the 538 numbers, and I don't think that they're, like, out of line on this, like, the 5 points is just worth so much.
Yeah.
Because I've sort of done this bit to death, but, like, the thing about 5 points is that, like, you get lucky just 1 week and it's 8 points.
It's true.
Like that I feel like that's the thing that you expect it. Okay, it's going to go down a little. It's going to down a little. It's going down a little. But like you get just a couple of breaks, and it is really hard to catch. So like,
I mean, it's kind of true. Although when everybody's following you, you have to get really lucky to go from 5 to 8, as opposed to going 5 to 6 or whatever.
That's true.
But yes, and I think that like 538 has them at like 2/3 to make the top 4, which seems right. And then, like, after that, it's probably between Liverpool and Chelsea to be the next most likely.
Yeah.
I mean, right, because, like, Liverpool is, what, 3 points behind West Ham, and Chelsea's 1 point behind West Ham, and, like, I think we think Chelsea is better than Liverpool, so I guess it's, like, Chelsea's next. But...
Right,
I would like to point out here that, like, that is significantly different than what 538 has. 538 has Liverpool next at 53%, followed by Chelsea at 37.
And this is all about schedule.
Yeah.
You know, Chelsea have Brighton, West Ham, City, Arsenal, Leicester, and Villa. Following their game against Palace this weekend. Like, Chelsea have one easy game on that stretch.
It's true.
Just Fulham.
And are more likely to be fighting the Champions League as well.
And exactly. They look very... Exactly. So, like, I think that the issue is just fundamentally how do you weigh quality plus 2 points against a much, much harder schedule?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm sold that Liverpool is more likely than Chelsea, given all that stuff. I mean, Liverpool could be playing one game a week here pretty soon.
Yeah, but again, these are tight margins.
Right.
Like, you know, they are. It's 538 is 53%, 37% with like an average point gap of 1 point.
Right. And then there's a pretty big gap, and I think we just talked this to death: West Ham over Spurs. Mm-hmm. But that those two teams are pretty close, although, like, somewhat behind. But, like, I do think that, like, if West Ham beat Leicester this weekend, everything gets blown way, like, even opener, which is kind of fun and exciting.
Exactly. I have, over the course of this podcast, I have talked myself into joy at the eternal recurrence.
There you go.
These are good teams, and, like, The schedule thing with Chelsea and Liverpool is really fascinating.
Yes. No, there's a lot of good games left in the schedule. Which, like, I guess is what happens when you have a lot of teams in it. But, like, I will say Root for Chaos is clearly, like, West Ham needs to beat Leicester so that you have two spots way open. And then... I suppose it's, like, possible West Ham beats Leicester and then, like, if Spurs don't beat United, now we have the 4-for-2. And that's real fun.
Which is kind of where we are in my head already, although Spurs are clearly still present at the moment.
Right. I mean, if Spurs beat United, like, then it gets, like, then, like, it's, like, not analyzable at that point. It's just, like...
Right, so we have, like, written down Spurs, like, just enough to say, okay, this is the worst team. Okay, we kind of don't expect them to be in there. But, like, they've had good runs this season. Yeah. They could just have another. Like, human beings are really confusing and complicated. Like, maybe they'll all want to play for a little bit. Or they could just get lucky.
There you go.
But, yeah, I think they're at the bottom, and we are going to be covering this some more. We'll be back with more podcasts when we talk about the Champions League at patreon.com/doublepivot.
All right, cheers, y'all.
Cheers.